Concession number 14982, Mr. J. Brown, reel 15.
Mr. Brown, reel 15. Alamein started, Mr. Brown. What are your memories of the beginning of the battle and immediately prior to it?
Well, the first thing was we got the usual handbill off the army commander, General Montgomery, putting her in the picture. He said they were really prepared for this battle, and he didn't say where he was going to strike. Obviously, he did strike in the north. But he said the battle would be a killing match. It probably last 10 days. And he was actually right on that. And he said this was the end for the Africa Corps. They were going to knock them for six right out of Africa, you see. So sure enough, on the 23rd...
Did this have an effect on your morale? Did you feel, oh, no, we're going to do something?
Oh, yes, aye. They said, well, you're hoping you're going to be in it, like, you know, see. Well, anyway... The battalion commanders and everything had been they'd been briefed, brigade commanders and the lot. They come up and they passed the word, don't put you in the picture. He was going to strike in the north, and he struck with, four divisions, I think. South Africans, Australians, New Zealanders and the 51st Iron Division, with British tank armoured units, like, and such as that. But anyway, the 23rd of October, it was somewhere, well, it was long before midnight, when... It's happened up in the bloody north, you could see the gun flashes and that. And this went on practically for days, you know, and one thing and another. But at the time, there was no more handbills forthcoming, which is understandable, but you got rumours of doing all right, and things was rough, and, you know. But what had actually happened, like, according to history books, the infantry had reached the objectives, such as they were, dug in, was hanging on to them, but the tanks just couldn't break through them anti-tank gun screens, you know. We'd been losing a tremendous amount of tanks. And the thing was, they must find a place, must break through, fan out, because we had predominance of tanks, and that would...
Were you doing anything in these days before?
No, just hanging about there, that was all. Aye. And did a couple of dummy runs in, and this, that and the other, which is now, you know, make believe. And there were still doing bits of patrols, which is now something, you know, because there was no way he was going to strike in the south when he was in trouble in the north, like.
Had you reached full strength now, the battalion?
No, we had one company back, D Company. We didn't have D Company. We got A Company back. And A Company back, and they were going to move in, take over, relieve one of the BSC, you know, for a rest. But at that time, the battle was maybe, 6 days old, 7 days old in the north? Maybe 8 days old. And orders were, there was a job for us in the north, see? They didn't tell you in the fair, didn't give it in detail. But anyway, we pulled out, brought daylight, and the Greeks moved in. They moved in as well, they were going to Roker Park, like it. But there was nothing happened, you know, that I think the boys on the other side had more to think about. And the Royal Army Service Corps was waiting, everything was on wheels, and they took us up into the north, like, you know. And then we had 2 full days there, you know, getting sorted out one thing and another. And then we marched forward to Telalisa.
What was happening as you were going forward, and try to cast your mind on that march? What was going on around
there? There was two marches, actually, you know. Your final one is the FUP, the Foreman Up Point, if you're going to go in that night, like. But we were a hell of a way back even then, you know. We'd bombed a couple of times with German fighter planes and that, and bombers coming over trying to do a bit of damage. And there was one or two cars we'd not to worry about, like. But we were about up and down somewhere. Where the hell was it? I think it was the 20th of October when they pulled us out the line. The Royal Army Service Corps was waiting for the wagons and they whipped us way up into the north. And all the way up, I remember, our divisional signs, TT, and it was marked periodically for the, make it easy for the transport drivers, like, see? And anyway, we got to this point, like, I just squatted round, scratted little holes in the ground, you know, slip trench and that, just for a bit of safety, like, and we're actually there 2 days. And we're getting fed and everything like that. And I think the battalion commanders have been going getting the final briefing, you know, see? And then we moved again, and it was went down a track that had been used by the 51st Division, and we passed our artillery, and they were still ploughing away, you know. And I understand at that particular time they were putting a barrage down for the Aussies, because the Aussies had a salient out, you know. They'd been out there, they were stuck there, like. And they were protecting them the best they could, like. And we got to an area that had been designated for us, like, I think it was somewhere near that ridge, Telalisa, you know, but they didn't tell you that. So I think we stopped there all night. There was a bit of bombing going off and one thing and another, but our Spitfires were being operative, and they were chasing the Germans whenever they could and one thing and another, you know. And there was one bomb dropped, aye, and blew a truck up and the adjutant got killed.
Who was that?
Eh?
Who was the adjutant?
I forget his... what the hell was they call him? Say they were changing their often, man. Say Chambers had done the job, this, that and the other. There were so many officers being killed. Anyway, the adjutant got killed anyway. And anyway, they decided that we're going in that night, say. But we're still about 7 miles from the Vaughan, you know, bloody long way. And they decided that A Company would go in on the left, B Company on the left, I should say, A Company on the right, and C Company was going in behind A Company for a certain number of yards, 400 yards. There was a German strong point on the right, which a Maori battalion was going to accommodate, like. That would save us losing too many troops doing that job. And as soon as they did that, we moved in on the right of, we were moving on the right of A Company and continue forward. Anyway, I think it was 5,000-6,000 yards that to go forward, like, to reach this Sidi El Rahman track, just a bloody name. There was a string of telegraph poles anywhere with no wires on, like, obviously. And I think it had been an old camel track from days gone by, like. But anyway,
when you moved up into the forming up position, what happened then? What were you doing there?
Well, we got this last point before we moved in that night. When we moved to this Telalisa place, like, it was just you were in artillery range and all that, and there was vehicles knocked out where they'd been fighting, it was just that and the other, you know. But you'd seen it all before, you didn't take that much, a great deal of notice, just watching for aircraft and such as that. Anyway, we've got a really good meal there, mechanics and such as that, you know. Filled your water bottles and all that sort of thing. And then we set up to put our formal point. And this must have been, what, 6 o'clock, take time or some of that. And off we went. It was about 7 bloody miles. You loaded up again, you know, and some blokes had picked shovels and all that. Well, that was a wearisome march.
What were you carrying? What were you carrying?
Well, just my entrenching tool, that was all. All the lads carry out that. Everybody doesn't have a pick and a shovel, you know. You just maybe have one pick, one shovel of a section, attack turns and such as that. Of course, the Bren gunner, he's got his Bren gun and all. He's kind of got extra weight, you know. But these are each other, you know. It's okay, carry this for a bit, will you, and all that, you know. You see? So I got this marsh we got there. Like, it was getting warming up a bit, you know. But nothing to disturb you. You see? And we've got the laid tapes out, you know, at your starting point. The pretty white tapes laid right away down on your area. And I think we were covering an area about, what? I don't know, 500 yards wide, maybe more, this, that and the other. And there was a brigade of the Highland Division going to be on our left. They had a certain objective to go, you know, but we had to do the main thrust. So we got there and it's quite this side. There's an odd burst of machine gun fire from the Germans, which was down out, like, just he would be nervous likely. But he was sending more bloody flares up. Every flare he got out was daylight over there, you know, in the German lines. And anyway, so what time would it be? About,
had you a long wait? Had you a long wait on the forming up position?
No, we got there maybe about roughly 9 o'clock. You didn't look at the watch. Where the battle, we're rolling in about 1 o'clock in the morning, you see. But you just get your kit off, ease it, and lie down, you know, see. And then they give you plenty of warning. I get your kit, so I wanted to get near the time. And they're just sitting talking one thing and another, and there'll be a lot of tension there, you know, everybody will be tense like you've got to be, to a certain degree, wondering what tomorrow was going to bring. And
did you move around your people? You were a sergeant, you say.
You move around, find them all right, everybody, we all right, and this, that, and the other.
Which platoon were you with? Which platoon were
14
you
14 platoon. And it's 13, 14 and 15. And anyway, we got, must have been after midnight, got a room ration. I've got a good room ration, and it's that new.
What does that do for you?
Why, I've liked to drink all my life. I suppose it helps, didn't I? I think the biggest fear is somebody's thinking about you, like. A lot of, that's why no lads won't drink. No, I didn't want it, like. So you can have two lads, you know, if you want them.
But, does it get to the point where one or two people are tipsy? Or
no,
I'm
sure. Didn't take any notice to that, like, you know. That they didn't give you the gallon, you know, don't remain, like, they weren't going to get you drunk, like, now to that. But,
how was your platoon? Were they in good heart for this attack that was about to start?
We were pretty new lads, like, we'd had a few from the South Wales borders, I think. Some kind of lads, some of the little fellas, you know, they wouldn't have got an army in peacetime, but they'd done the training, they'd been called up, and they were all right in here. And didn't see anybody who Christ doing them had gone in there and all that, you know, that didn't happen there, like. But anyway, get your kit on, get ready, you know, and there's a company, B company down there somewhere, spread out, and we were back here. And get your kit on, and then the bloody time come, like, everybody's what's waiting. Then those just half a dozen guns opened up, you know, plop, 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 plop. Then all of a sudden, you bugger, they start to shake, you know, and he looked back and saw that lad, God almighty hell. And it was well organised on each flank, on the battalion flanks, that both of guns, firing every 2 or 3 minutes, trace it, you know, so keep one line and such as that. And the barrage is going down for about, and the Germans is about 2 minutes, bong, well, you know, and then they'll drop a couple of smoke, 2 or 3 smoke bombs, shells, you know, and they're a pretty nuisance, like powder rake, you know, choking you. But anyway, where they dropped, you know, the barrage was lifting, so you just moved in.
Who was your platoon officer?
He died in England. I was a prisoner then, but he died in England. I don't know what of him. Freddie Bullman, long crook. Freddie Bullman.
What was he like?
He said, "Canny filly, he'd had a kind of a service, and he's still lieutenant like." But he was quiet fella, canny to talk to. Nothing aggressive about him like. But he did his job, you know. He didn't. There was no flinching about him like. All right.
What was the method of your moving forward? What was the system for you, your platoon, for example? How did you move forward?
Well, you move forward, you have two platoons forward and one in reserve. Every company will do that, you know. And the old-fashioned way is one in front and two back. They're two forward and one in reserve. Well, you're not that far behind, you know. See what I mean? You didn't want to be massed and mass-like. Well, when it kicked off and this barrage was going down, it was bloody eerie, but it was nice to be behind it, you know. But it's the German machine gunners was really having a go. We have an odd one that went down, but A and B company, I think particularly B company, was getting a packet, you know, for casualties like. And then we moved forward, and then the Maoris must have done his job. There was hell on going, all of the noise, you know, it was tremendous like. And then we moved in alongside Air Company, and you couldn't see them, like, you know where the hell they were, you were, but these chasers was coming over from the Beaufort Guns, you know, the company commander would keep you and everything in hand, like, and such as that. And then the first thing there was, some of the Germans was coming out to Powder Ray, hysterical, you know, what a bloody state they were in. You know, God almighty, there's dozens of them coming out. Some of them were screaming, crying, and one thing and another. Must have been bad, being right under that barrage. But his machine gunners were still having a go of the diehards, you know, and hard mortars not coming over.
What did you do with the Germans that were coming out?
Well, there's quite a few went back as prisoners, but a hell of a lot got to come up. It's like, you say that list of Montgomery's, said the watchword, he said, the last list we got, the final one about what he was going to do, and he said the watchword is kill Germans. So what they did, they were shutting the buggers down like the flies, man, aye. Ropes had never shut any bugger before, was having a go, aye, it certainly was. I don't know whether that's good or bad, but it was good from our point of view. You know what I mean? And
men would
others, be... you would get, you'd maybe get, two, get a couple of dozen, you know, or some of them were wounded and that, no, and they'll have a bloody state. And then you'd organise them, and you had your own walking wound, and somebody been hit in arm or somebody, it went back with them, like, you know. And that sort of thing would. Angry, like, but wasn't the worst battle by no means, because this barrage was was doing, were the Kazakhs were having those machine gun fire and such as that, you know, but and the company commander had a bloke, I think it was your Batman, what the hell they call him, Crawley, somebody, he had to pace this out all the way, and out us to do, he had a hell of a job, wasn't he, he had to count the paces, you know, this, that and the other. Well, somewhere along the line, I don't know how many, it was about 5,000 or 6,000 yards we had to do. I think when they did about 3,500 yards, you had to stop for about half an hour for consolidation, find out what was happening, this, that and the other, you know. And that happened.
And what do you do then? Do you go to ground?
I just squat down, find where there's enemy positions there, you know, squat in anywhere you like, this, that and the other. Get a drink out of the water bottle and... Something about you have a smoke because the lights didn't make all the difference. And there was a few lads, big companies getting well beaten up, I think. And I think it was a big company. There was some of the lads come over and joined our company, joined 13th Platoon on the left. Then it was forward again. But the barrage had stopped for that time, you know. Then it started again, right, time to go forward.
Well, had you been given any orders about your wounded? If a man was wounded, did you stop to see to him?
Oh, no, you stretch your bed as far as you're supposed to have. I mean, you weren't charging for it, you know what I mean? You were just really not more than a bloody stroller, you know, and there was dugouts and such as that, you know, and whether there was anybody in or not, you had to fire a burst in or throw a grenade in and all that sort of thing, you know. And as I said, a lot of these Germans that was... They didn't have given themselves up. They were such a bad state. The blokes were just shutting a lot of them down, you know. And but there was a point of, I shouldn't mention it, like, but there was a mate of mine. He was platoon sergeant. He was in B Company. He got wounded. He got one throw at you and come out here somewhere.
Through his arm.
Aye. And he was. He got back to battalion headquarters and they were lining up. Why you couldn't get them out? You know, there was ambulances coming and taking them as quick as they could. And they've been dressed there the best they could, and prisoners have been assembled.
So what, again, are your memories of the rest of this attack?
Well, I say, we're having casualties, mind, you know what I mean, like one thing and another, but what no problem with mines and out like that. There was, found two blokes, one was dead with a barrage and the other, tip of Germany, he's rolling about, he's really blonde there and that. They had a tin box, I think they've been going to lay booby traps or something like that, and has been caught in a barrage. So He's lying there, so Cyril Thompson from Bishop Wharton, Cyril shot the bugger. He said, hey, language, you know, rim, so and so, boobies, that's the plan. But anyway, I've got the, what it should have been this, not to me, like, but I mean, this bloke was counting the steps. He must have said the English where we're about here, like. But being here in English, he went forward another about another 300 yards, you know. And then the body stopped, so then, you know, there must have been that. The squire digging in the best you can, scrapping in all over the place, you know. And it was down on a forward slope again, being better, being back over here. Sent a quick patrol out left and right. There was no air company on the left, and there was an E6 battalion on the right. Well, I would have thought there, we should have pulled back, like, to the front, but we didn't, we'd really stopped there. And, we scratched in the best you could, you know, and it wasn't too bad, a bit of machine gun fire going one thing and another. And then when daylight broke, like, you could see the Germans operating over there with 88mm guns, you know. So getting the cannon digger, the 88mm, could have stand you, but you can get it down the best you can, you know. And then it was later on, we had a few wounded lying about and all, and our tanks, oh, this is good, like. There was about a dozen tanks, German tanks, come forward, and only a couple hundred yards away. I thought, well, tell the bugger, see ya. But anyway, they stopped. But they could say what we couldn't say. We are the ridge, they could say the mass of British armour, like, you know. So they pulled back, and our tanks coming out of the ridge, they must have knocked 20 buggers out in the crack with these antics. You know what I mean? They were having a go, like, not one or two 88mm, but he had quite a few of them there, like. So our tanks pulled back. So you can only guess in your mind what's going to happen, like. So they called artillery up. Why? It's difficult to dig an 88mm in properly, you know. Yeah, you've got to have the bottle up here somewhere. So our 25-pounders sorted it out again, sorted the problem out again. And knocked most of them out, mind. Most have done. And then he got lined on our position, because there was odd ones, you know, and all this. And he started to shell us and mortars, you know. Marbury Castle, some lads couldn't get them away, you know, for the night transport. And English went back to find, took his back, and he went back to find battalion headquarters just to see what was what, you know. He was away quite a while, and one of the other officers took, oh, I don't know if it was Freddie Bullman or what, but anyway, you were dug in there, just opened for the bloody vest. So these lads was moaning and groaning, you know, I couldn't treat them properly. And, oh, one of the Shermans had got knocked out. There was about 20 tanks. I said, come over. There was one lad bailed out. The rest of the crowd didn't get out. What a bloody state he was in. We dragged him in where we were. But he was burnt, you know. Oh, he's moaning, groaning. I don't think he would survive, like. But it was late. It must have been late on a bloody afternoon. He lost contact of time and everything, like. And English had come back then, like, took over the situation. And then there was a young officer, forget his name again, he come so best he could. I'm not sure whether he had a motorbike or something, things in that bloody years. And he find English, the order was pulled back in line with the 9th Battalion and the 6th Battalion, because I think A Company and B Company hadn't ceased to exist, but they were so depleted. You had 9th on our left, 6th on the right, that's right. So, anyway, but a young officer, Anyway, English gave him the job, they're pulling the fit men back, and English and his batman stopped there with a wounded leg. So they would take the chance. But anyway, it must have been a couple hours later. There was a carrier come up with a Red Cross flag on, and a 1,500-weight truck. It was, I think it was a New Zealander driving it. Aye. And they went to pick the wounded up and brought them back, like. But
and the Germans didn't fire on them?
No, they got away. There's fire gone, you know, but they weren't pinpointing them out. You understand what I mean? And where we were dug in there the best we could, we got a hell of a bloody barrage. The 9th Armoured Brigade was in that area, and they'd got orders to pull back, because they'd lost a lot of... They were ordered to pull back. Well, if the Germans could say to them, I don't know what a bloody barrage you put down. Christ, all righty. Did he not? But...
What are your reactions then? You're lying there pretty important. You can't do anything about the barrage. It's landing.
Well, you just open for the best, like. Your mind gets into a bit of a blank, like. You know, well, something will happen sometime, like, but obviously you've got to wait for orders, like. You kind of do your own thing. You kind of say, well, I'm going back or I'm going forward. You've got to wait.
Did men crack under a barrage like this? Were men running or kind of losing control?
It could happen, but particularly I didn't say it, like. I tell you the easiest one, like, the more my wide awake in the Second World War than the First World War, like, be right, you know. The hole in the ground job. You know, if you're going forward, they'll get a hole in the ground, then they just weren't quite sure, they'd stop there, see? So, by and large, like, when you're going in, the platoon officer's leading you now, platoon sergeant's at the back, getting the strags up, you see? And if and when you can, you kick them up the ass, go on, get your son-sell out of there. Get going, get on, you know. But if you missed them, you say, so-and-so's missing. Now, you turn up later and say, I got lost, I got this, got that. But you know where it'd be, a bloody hole in the ground, you say. First World War, you got caught, marked and shot. But they went all like that, mind. The vast majority kept gang-like, open for the best.
What's the reaction to someone who is, in effect, does stay in the hole when you get back and he turns up?
Well, lads are saying, well, you'll get to show you so-and-so, one thing or another. No, I wasn't a bloody hole on the ground. I was, but anyway, the 9th was over there, so we 6th over there. They would be in the really same state as us. And orders was, the New Zealands were pulling to come and take it over that night, ready for the big push, you know. They knew, like, that he broke his back. They must have known, he broke his back and was just going to take another little effort and the tanks were through. The New Zealands were moving up, their trucks would follow them up, and they were going to follow through, say. So they were taking off. It must have been after midnight when they actually got up. They were late, like. And then we started to march back. Must have marched a couple of hours when our own transport met us on the Lightfoot, the regimental quartermaster sergeant. It wasn't his job, but he met us with the trucks. And they took us back to back to our original start point, the forward march of 7 miles, you know, they tell us. And he just dropped off the trucks there and went to sleep. So bloody exhausted, aye. And
that's the first reaction, sleep.
Oh, you it really sets in, you know. And as I said before, when you feel you're comparatively safe, rest, you know. And anyway, we staggered on next morning. They were bringing bits of meals round and such as that, the cokes of and hot meals and such as that. And on your feet, they were attached to the 9th Division cooks and were to line up in where their headroom was. And I think that by that time our tanks were so streaming on with it, and they were going to come out, push on the side, and what was in the middle. It'd been a bloody good start. Mother Nature into it, absolutely bloody rain. It rains like, didn't get much. Why, the wheel, anything on wheels was stuck, so these forces away. Okay. And what was this forward, you know? You did it automatically. Out there, playing hell about the jet.